Welcome to the Break Your Bullshit Box podcast, where excuses aren't tolerated and results are earned through authenticity, vulnerability, and a commitment to excellence. My name is Amber Furman, success architect, attorney, and NLP trainer. If you're ready to bitch slap the bully in your brain, overcome the bullshit that holds you back, and design the life and success you've always wanted, then it's time for you to break your bullshit box and step into designing life and success on your terms. Welcome back to another episode of the Break Your Bullshit Box podcast. Today, I have an amazing conversation with Tamara Zoner. Tamara is an award-winning keynote speaker and happiness trainer. She supports people struggling in transition to develop deeper relationships with themselves and others, cultivate authentic happiness, and create a life that you love now. I absolutely loved this conversation with Tamara. We talked about so many amazing things regarding happiness and failure and complacency and contentment and all of the things that I know we deal with on a regular basis. I'm really excited to share the episode with you. Before we do, I want to take just a minute to remind you that this episode is brought to you by Success Development Solutions and the Break Your Bullshit Box Academy. If you are somebody who feels like you're not getting the traction that you want in getting your goals to the next level, you keep setting goals and failing at them, you keep setting new goals and it seems like you're always setting the same ones over and over and over again, then the Academy might be for you. What we've created for you to be able to figure that out is a success blueprint workbook. It is free. You can head over to blueprint.successdevelopmentsolutions.com and download a copy of that for yourself today. Get started on finding out maybe where some of the potholes are at in what you are creating as far as goal setting is concerned, and take a look at how you might be able to do something just a little bit differently. If that's something that interests you, head over to that. Again, that's blueprint.successdevelopmentsolutions.com and download that free guide. Without further ado, let's jump into this episode with Tamara. Tamara, thank you so much for coming on the show with me today. I'm so excited to have you here.
Yay. Thank you for having me, Amber. I'm excited to be here.
Of course. And I feel like, I don't know if it's the Michigan thing or if it's just that instant finding something in yourself about somebody else. But every time I find somebody that's from the Midwest, I just know it's going to be a fantastic conversation.
We're good people.
Good people. I know, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm really interested. We're just going to dig right in. They heard in the intro that you are a happiness trainer. And I love that that is a term that I'm not familiar with. Can you tell us what happiness trainer means? I think we all have our own ideas, but let us know what it means to you.
Thank you. So the thing is, we grow up, we are taught a lot of things, but we're not taught what happiness really means or how to cultivate it. We think it's some destination that, you know, if we get the degree, the partner, the house, the kids, 2.5 of them, then we'll land in happy land. And it doesn't happen that way. And happiness is really a skill that we can practice. And there's a set of tools and different exercises and ways of being that we can cultivate it. So I train people just like you see at the gym. There's a trainer helping people build specific muscles. I'm helping them build happiness muscles, inner peace and well-being muscles, mental health muscles. You know, we talked briefly about like that critical voice, how to actually weaken that muscle.
Yeah.
Our own confident voice becomes the stronger one. And what people don't realize is that it really takes concerted effort.
Yeah. I love this so much. You are speaking my language and you're speaking my story, because that's exactly how I ended up in this space. Is people always ask me, why did you go to law school? And law school to me was a trauma response. It was a trauma response because there was supposed to be enough success that was going to take away the pain that I didn't want to deal with in my life. Like all of the trauma got put in this box and a certain amount of success was supposed to take it away and make me happy. And what's so dangerous about that, and I want to see how you address this from the happiness side,
For me, it was the success side. I don't think that I really believed happiness was possible. It wasn't something that I focused on or cared about. I didn't necessarily want to be happy. I just didn't want to be in pain anymore. And success was supposed to make that happen. So for me, it was a success definition. And I tell people all the time that the most dangerous thing that can happen is that you tie your definition of success to this external result. Because what happened for me was I hit it and I didn't know how to function in a world where that work didn't create this result. And how often do you see that where people reach their goals and that's actually a detriment to them?
Yeah, so often that it's one of the first things that I address in talks with new clients, this myth of more. It's one of the big myths of happiness. And it sounds like when I get that degree, or when I get paid more, or when I have children, then I'll be happy. But the problem is that that's an external circumstance that we are basing our happiness on. And the internal person is still the same.
I hear people talk about this a lot in weight loss, which is something that I had never thought of before. They were like, nobody told me that if I lost 100 pounds, I was still going to feel like a fat person in a thin person's body.
Yeah.
Because we don't address that. So when we reach that point, how many of your clients just feel like an unhappy person in a body of somebody that should be happy?
Exactly. And that's one of the main reasons people come to me is they'll literally tell me I ticked all the boxes. I did all the things and here I am. This was the, you know, pinpoint of happiness on my map and I'm not happy. So what the heck? What now? And so we start to go into the internal map because this is where we can, I like to use the word cultivate a deep sense of happiness. And let me tell you, Amber, the definition that I use for happiness, because I could
I'm so excited.
1,000 people and you'd have 1,000 different answers. Happiness in my work is an inner state of peace and well-being that doesn't depend on circumstance.
I love that so much. So in a world where so many people are constantly comparing themselves to other people, setting external benchmarks, where we're raised in a school system that has taught us that without external success, we're not valuable. How do we start to undo? And let me preframe this for all my teachers out there to say that I know that there is no perfect education system and there's no way that we can, like, it does the best that it can with the resources it has, maybe, I don't know. To me, it's so harmful because not enough focuses on being enough as you are. It's always, what do you want next? What do you want next? How do we unwire that in people?
We start teaching the adults who become parents so that they can demonstrate this to their kids. When I work with parents, I am a parent. It's a show, not tell job. And you're right. We're socialized in this society and in most Western societies, and even in the Eastern ones, look at Japan, that it's this external success factor that will bring you joy and bring you happiness, but it's really joy and happiness that will bring you success. And we've got to rewire and be willing to do things differently. And I'll tell you that it takes a courageous soul to decide that they want to step outside the well-worn path of tick the boxes to, no, I don't want to just do the things that look good. I want to be someone who feels good.
So a couple of things that I'm so excited to dig into. Happiness trainer is not on like career days checklist. So how did you wake up one day and say, you know what, I'm going to train happiness for a living?
Right. Well, it was, of course, a journey, but ultimately it began when I was deeply unhappy. So I woke up one day going, what the hell is this?
Imagine that, right?
Yeah. I had gotten so uncomfortable that I was finally willing to change because I had tried. I was in a very controlling, emotionally abusive marriage. I had three little kids, two when I started to wake up, and I found myself yelling at my beautiful little children who didn't deserve it. And I had studied psychology in college. I had studied human development and then, went and did nothing to do with that and then got married and moved around. And so halfway through my marriage and starting to have kids, I realized this is not it. This is not okay for me to be treated this way. This is not the life I expected. I had ticked some boxes and there was no happiness in sight. And so I started searching. I started, initially I had tried to do the external things like, oh, I'll just become the perfect wife and then everything will be fixed. Well, that did not work at all. So finally I gave up and started turning inward and looking at like, what do I need to be a person that I respect first and foremost? And so I got back into personal development. I got into coaching, life coaching. I became a certified life coach. I don't like just learn about things. I just
Yeah, of
started,
course.
right? I didn't just hire a coach. I became a coach. And I got a few different certifications. And I'd been in this work for a few years. I worked my butt off. I cultivated courage and confidence and was able to leave that marriage and start completely over, terrifying as hell, but well worth it. And about, it was actually during COVID, I was coaching on the side, but I was working in senior living full time. And COVID hit, and I was the director of life enrichment. So still doing this work, but in, a JOB. And all of a sudden, one day, I could no longer do my job, which was to bring people together. Now we had to keep them apart. And we happened to be the first senior living community in Michigan to have a positive COVID case. So it hit us really hard. And 5 days after it all began, I started having symptoms. So I was off work for 3 weeks because we didn't know anything at that time. And I surely did not want to pass this on to any more seniors. We lost quite a few residents. But it gave me, this really, looking back on it, beautiful period of self-reflection and what am I really doing? And in that time, all this person I had followed for a long time kept having her own happiness training program come up, and I was like, oh, this is synchronicity. All right, so I took another certification and became a happiness trainer, and I started initially teaching it in the senior community, and it made such a difference in the lives of 80 and 90-year-olds that I thought, I can't keep this here. It's time for me to take that next bold, courageous action and leave the full-time secure job to teach this to the world because everybody needs this. And so I've taught enrichment programs in high schools and I've taught private clients and a lot of parents and a lot of people going through any kind of big transitional phase or about to. There's people who have gotten to that point where they're thinking, there's got to be more. I'm not happy in my job or in my marriage or in life. What do I do now? And so we come right back to the beginning, just like I did for me. So I literally teach people how to walk the steps back into who they are and what they really want out of life.
You know, I find that especially in the coaching industry, that's so much the story. No, like nobody says, I want to become a coach because they want to become a coach. They want to become a coach because they've been through shit and they know what it feels like to go through shit and they want to help other people go through less shit, right?
That's exactly it.
Which, because that was my story as well, right? Like, attorney, six-figure income, supporting myself, first person in my family to go to college, and I felt like such a failure. And how can those two things exist in one person? And it exists when you're not congruent with number one, where you're going, but number two, where like there's no level of accomplishments or success or external validation that will fill a hole of somebody who doesn't believe in themselves. And there's no, it's so funny how I can be so much happier with less.
Yeah.
When I love myself than I was with more when I needed other people to show me how much they loved me. You said something before, though. We live in a high achieving society. We live in a society where we're constantly told that we should be working on the next thing, and people are constantly setting goals and resolutions and improving. And it's a double-edged sword. How do we create and cultivate happiness now without getting complacent?
That's a really great question. Because we can get caught in this trap of bettering ourselves too.
Right. All day.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to be the next best version of myself all day long.
How do we create and focus on happiness now while also avoiding getting complacent and still allowing ourselves to focus on growth?
I think part of that, Amber, is that we really need to decide what it is we want in life. So clarity is key, and it's power to create anything we want in life. And instead of focusing on what we want to do, I like to focus on how we want to be. So what do I want my life to feel like? And often when I work with clients, I start with the first thing that I ever did that helped me transform my life, which is this process of clarity. So I always ask people to make a list of 10 to 12 things. What do you want to be, do, feel, and have in your life? Mm. And if it doesn't, when you're writing this list, if it doesn't like jazz you up, if it doesn't feel vibrant, if you don't feel your energy tick up, try again, because life is meant to be felt. And this experience is meant to light us up. And we have to be real. There will be challenges. We are humans. It will happen. And that's okay. But what do you want to feel? Do you want to wake up in the morning and love the woman you see in the mirror? That's clarity. Do you want to, right? Do you want to feel vibrant and energized in your body? That's clarity. So it doesn't matter ultimately what you're doing as far as a job or volunteerism or whatnot. What matters is how you're being and feeling, and the rest comes later. But without that internal sense of self and joy, love, vibrancy, however you want to call it, nothing else really matters.
There's a thought popping in my head that as many times as I've thought about this idea of growth and complacency, it's never popped up this way. It's coming to me that if we are truly happy, then it's impossible to be complacent, because happy people want growth and connection.
Yeah.
It's impossible for a happy person to sit here and be like, this is enough, unless it's enough. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
But when I think about where my journey has gone, and I think about the times where it felt effortless, it was the times where I was truly okay with what I had. And if I didn't gain any more, that I knew that I was still as valuable as I am with less. And then more intrinsically just comes. So it's interesting to me, based upon your answer, that sometimes the deterrent to complacent is happiness.
Yeah, I totally agree, because when we are happier, we have more energy. We want to do more. We want to connect with others. And so it naturally follows that we don't become complacent, because there's more to life than Netflix and chilling, right? Which has its place and time. And we have this inner vibrancy that drives us forward in our lives so that we don't become complacent. And that doesn't mean we don't take time to chill and relax. Like, I love a good lake day. And when we do this work, we can have that chilled out, relaxed time and know that we're worth that too. And that it's safe to not be doing, achieving, or striving, because we are already enough in this place. And so we deserve, and we are worthy of rest and relaxation and fun.
Yeah. And for people that are listening, I mean, when you take that rest day and that relaxation day because you need to unwind and unplug, how much of that time are you actually spent resting and unplugging, right? You're so busy thinking about all the things that you're supposed to be doing, or all the reasons that you shouldn't be at the lake, or all of the reasons that somebody else needs you to be somewhere else, that you're not actually getting self-care. So it's so important to be able to allow ourselves the freedom to say, this is where, if I'm going to be here, I'm going to be 100% here. My family deserves that just as much as somebody else does, which I think is difficult for a lot of people.
I definitely think it's practice.
Yeah, it is for sure.
Spent a whole year practicing being comfortable in doing nothing because, I was raised by a farmer and a woman who was the oldest of seven kids, so they're doers. And when I left my marriage, I moved home, back in with mom and dad in the home I was raised in while I got back on my feet. And I would be like, oh, it's Sunday, I get to rest today. And then I'd see my dad out there in his 70s on a tractor.
Yeah, there is no rest for a farmer. I grew up in a
No,
farming community. There is
none.
none.
And so I had to really practice, and here's a huge point of all of this work. I had to practice being uncomfortable in that moment of knowing logically that I deserved and needed to rest, and also feeling like I should be doing something.
Yeah,
So
I can resonate with that for sure. And I know there's a lot of people listening that can as well. There's something else that you said that I want to make sure people heard, and I want to make sure that we spend a little bit of time on, because it could be the thing that if they take nothing else out of this podcast, I hope it's this. And let me set a little bit of a pre-frame. As I was trying to figure out why my law degree that I worked so hard for didn't fix all my problems, and I had found the personal development world that I didn't even know existed. I was sitting at a conference in 2019, and I heard one of the speakers say, I wish people would stop focusing on the career that they want to have and start focusing on the life that they want to have and see what gets them there. And it was the first time that I had ever looked at the lives of the people that were mentoring me in the legal profession. What are their lives like? Do I want what it is that they have? When I look at how they talk about their lives, is that what I want to create? So you said a minute ago, I want people to focus on how they want to feel. And to me, that is the most important the important question that people can ask themselves is, what do I want to create as far as a feeling is concerned, and what's going to get me there? Because there's a million ways to skin a cat, for lack of a better word, right? There's a million ways to create that feeling. So when you get somebody like me that is less than resistant to the idea of feels, and somebody who is like, when I found this world, I was a type A, feelings don't matter. Give me the facts. Let me analyze them. Let me put everything into the box where it belongs and organize everything in the way that it's going to make sense to everybody else, and fuck feelings. And now I know that that's just not the way that you can live. So how do we get people out of the day? This is a long question. Sorry. How do we get people out of the day-to-day of analyzing their life and into figuring out how they feel about it?
I wish it were an easy answer. It really takes them getting to a point where they're uncomfortable. Until we can start teaching this really early, until we can like get every adult learning this, and then therefore we teach our children this, it's going to take, just like you and I both experienced, a level of what the hell is my life to come to the point of I've got to do something different. What haven't I tried? What and to some extent I believe it's like a little bit of magic, right? People find me through some synchronicity. I came through this path through like just these moments of, huh, that's in my environment. Huh, that showed up again. Maybe I should pay attention. But it requires that we're kind of in the right space of being sick of what we've been doing and being willing to try something new and to take a different path.
Yeah. It's such a double-edged sword because I remember having a conversation with somebody about, oh, 5 years ago, right about the time that I was realizing that I needed a change. And I remember telling them, like, a six-figure income is not going to do it for you. It's not like, not unless you know the purpose for wanting that, not unless you have this goal and plan and what it is you want it for. But I promise, if you're not enough without it, you'll never be enough with it. And he looked at me like I had seven heads. Like, he couldn't comprehend, and I think this is where a lot of people get stuck. He couldn't comprehend how money wouldn't equal happiness because he had never been there. And I think, I made this comment to somebody the other day that coaching is half, like, actually solving problems and shifting somebody's mindset, and the other half just laying as much padding as you can for when they crash so that it doesn't hurt as bad as it would otherwise. So I love that you talk to kids. I love that you bring this happiness into young families. There's this level of they're never going to believe it until they see it. They've got to try it themselves, they got to make their own mistakes. How do we plant those seeds in an effective manner so that as they're making those mistakes and stumbling and figuring out that maybe we have a little bit of an idea what we're talking about, that the crash landing hurts less?
I love that you used planting seeds because that's exactly what we're doing with our kids, whether we're teachers or parents or we work with kids in any capacity. It's really, really that we're showing them what it looks like. And guess what? It's okay to crash. That's the other thing. Like, for those of us raised to not feel, like there's no place for feelings here. We've got to demonstrate that it's okay to feel, right? So, do I completely lose my shit in front of my kids? Not anymore. But do I allow them to see that I'm a human being having a human experience with feelings and emotions? 100%. Do they get to see that I get frustrated? Sure thing. And they also get to see how I use my tools to manage stress, to manage a situation, to deal like to their father is my ex-husband. Like they know. So, and now they're all teenagers, so they it's a different level, but we get to demonstrate how to be human to our kids. And I think that for our parents, if we're anywhere from, I don't know, 35 and up, our parents were raised to be this rock solid, unemotional, sometimes even not caring, because they just had to be the parental figure. If we want to
Not
change
only
these
not
roles,
caring, but I think this idea of happiness is foreign. You know,
it is.
if we would have looked, if you and I would have looked at our parents, and actually this is exactly what happened when I did look at my parents and say, I'm just not happy. They looked at me with like four heads, like,
Like,
why,
so
what
what?
is happiness? Yeah, what does happiness have to do with your career? Like, I or the saying that I know somebody who's listening to this has heard, it can't just be me. Of course you're not happy, Amber. It's not supposed to be easy. That's why they call it work, right? Like, all of the things about how work is supposed to be difficult and it's not supposed to be fun because that's the way that they were raised. I mean, look at your dad. You mentioned that your dad is a farmer. I love the farming community, and there are truly farmers that are so passionate about what they do that they can't imagine doing anything else. Even those farmers, though, they wake up and they know that their day is going to be hard and they're not always happy. And that's not even a conversation that comes into play. And while I respect the shit out of them for being able to do that job, it makes me really sad that they don't know that happiness is an option.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, happiness is a word that, like I mentioned, means different things to different people, but you can have a career path, a life that is hard. And if there's a deep sense of contentment, that's happiness. So there are monks living in caves in Tibet who are really, really happy. Is it an easy life? Not necessarily. But are they happy? Yes. And so someone might have lived a parallel life to yours and been really happy as an attorney in whatever. You know, there are police officers doing really hard shit who some are really, really happy and some are not. And so it really does depend on who you are, your unique circumstance, what you've been raised to believe and what you've decided to believe. And it doesn't matter if you already are generally happy in your life. Like I get a lot of, oh, I'm happy enough. Okay, well, let's talk about that a little. What does that mean?
Yeah, I'm happy enough. There isn't really a happy enough. It's so funny because I always tell people in my training when they're like, well, I'm like mostly happy. I'm like, that's like mostly pregnant. You're either pregnant or you're not, right? There's no in between. And then I had somebody come through my training recently and she says, I'm halfway pregnant. And I'm like, what the fuck is halfway pregnant? And she's like, I'm 4 months. And I was like, oh. I'm like, I can't use halfway pregnant anymore because somebody has actually used it to describe. I'm like, I think you're all the way pregnant, my dear. Right. You're just halfway done being all the way pregnant.
Exactly. So you can be halfway to happiness too.
Exactly.
And I want to really bring home the fact that we can be really happy people and still feel unhappy. Like it doesn't mean that we are constantly on high, that we're constantly joyful. I mentioned I have 3 teenagers and an ex-husband. Like there are challenges in life and I'm not happy every minute. But my overarching theme of life is one of joy and contentment. And it makes the harder stuff easier. Mm-hmm. I can move through it. And this is one of the practices that I teach is how to sit with those uncomfortable emotions, those things we'd rather not feel, and just be with it and make friends with it. Even if we don't feel that friendly, I'm like, take it to tea. What does it have to tell you? Like, can you just be with it for a minute?
I love that.
Literally do recommend sometimes they take it to tea. And just sit with it because all of our feelings are just like that doggy, right? They just want some attention. They just want us to pay attention. They're signals going, hey, something's going on. So if our foot hurts, if we have a headache, we pay attention to those most like after a while, at least, because it's telling us something. Something's going on in my body. I need to pay attention to it. What can I do about it so that I feel better? Emotions are the same. So if I feel really exhausted, frustrated, angry, sad, depressed, down. Those are, again, just signals that are asking for our attention.
So you almost read my mind on where I wanted to go next. If I could stand on a mountaintop and scream at a certain group of people, it would be the people that prescribed the idea that you always have to be happy and positive. This idea of toxic positivity, this idea that if you have a negative thought, that you need to drown it with positive thoughts. The idea that if you're sad, then you're ungrateful. And if you have a negative thought, then you're ungrateful. It's so damn damaging to the idea of true happiness. So what is your take? And what is your solution for toxic positivity?
I 100% agree with you. And that is really harmful. That's why it's called toxic, right? It's so harmful. It's faking it. It's invalidating our experience. So the remedy is to validate our experience, to be real with ourselves, and to understand that happiness means that it's all of it. That as human beings, we get to. And I will often work with people's language. We can be grateful and we can be pissed. We can, you know, so accepting ourselves as we are, where we're at, is one of the first steps of cultivating a life that feels better. Because when we're constantly telling ourselves we're wrong for feeling what we feel, God, can anyone remember a time in their childhood when someone said something that hurt their feelings, or they stubbed their toe and your parents said, don't cry, you're fine.
Get over it. Or,
oh,
stop crying or I'll give you something to cry about.
Oh, I heard that one.
Oh.
Right?
All
it's
day.
Completely invalidating. Instead, it's like, oh, that hurt, didn't it? Can we just be there for a minute?
Yeah. Can I just sit here and tell you that, like, I'm not okay for a minute? You know, I watched a video a while back, and I don't have kids. I am fascinated by people that parent well. And I'm fascinated by the different styles of parenting. And in the training and the work that I do, I love working with parents, similar to what you said, in the idea of breaking these generational cycles of beliefs that create futures. And I saw a video once of a kid and a mom getting frustrated with each other. Mm-hmm. And she said, I know that you're frustrated. And I get that because you've never been 14 before. You get to realize that I've also never parented a 14-year-old before. So let's be frustrated together and figure out how we can get through this, because you've never been 14 and I've never parented somebody who is. And I thought that was such a human way of saying, I know that you don't know how to feel right now, but neither do I, because I've never dealt with somebody that feels like this before. So we're just going to have to figure this shit out together.
Right. That is so solid. I love that so much. I was just talking to a woman today who reached out to me because she wanted her son, who's 8, to talk to me. And I said, you know, I have worked with teens, but I don't work with kids. I work with parents to help you accept where you're at, to increase your pause button, to take better care of yourself so that you can be that loving, present person for your child. And therefore, your parenting will improve. You'll feel like a woman that you respect, because you'll have the skills and tools to be with your child, because you've learned how to be with yourself. And that's the heart of it, is can we be loving and compassionate with ourselves? It's all about the relationship we have with ourselves and how we relate to ourselves. How do I talk to myself? How do I treat myself? Some people think that they're taking care of themselves and they have self-care if they go out and have a drink with their girlfriends. Well, there's a time for that. And also, self-care is doing the laundry that you've been avoiding. Taking a shower, you know, it's sitting with yourself and having a good cry. It's all sorts of unsexy things that are really, really necessary. It's getting enough sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for that. I don't get enough sleep. I'm also going to take it one step further and say that it's the mindset that you have when you're doing those things, right? Because if you're out with drinks with your friends and the entire time you're bitching about how you're not good enough or you failed today, that's not self-care. If you're taking a shower thinking, man, I failed as a parent today and I'm so awful, that's not self-care. Like, self-care to me can look like anything where you are willing to take a pause button. And it's different for everybody. And I love that you said that, because I am your least typical girl on the planet. It's similar to you, I would bet, because I grew up on a farm. I grew up in a farming community. I am the only daughter in a family of really active male influences that love to find out how much they can push the limits of gravity before they get hurt. So for me, like, my self-care are sporting events, physical activities, things that, you know, when my mom looks at me and says, will you just take a self-care day and like go to the spa? No, because that's awful for me. That is not self-care for me. I am so stressed when I go to a spa because I don't enjoy it. Take me to a hockey game, take me to an obstacle course race, let me run a marathon with you. Like, that's my self-care,
yeah.
right? And so I think I want people to be able to take from this conversation that they get to decide, just like they get to decide what happiness looks like for them, they get to decide what self-care looks like for them. And the only way that I can describe it is that, like, people get to unwrap this thing of Legos, and they get to pick out the ones that make the most sense to them, and they get to build this thing that everybody else might think is incredibly ugly and not functional, and they would build it differently, but it's theirs and it makes sense to them, and it's the way that they want it, and they get to love that unconditionally.
I love that metaphor because it is such a unique experience, and everyone gets to decide for themselves what feels good to them. I teach like 100 different tools, and I always invite my clients, try this on for a week. See how it feels for you. If you don't like it, toss that one aside, and here's a different one. They always find tools and practices that fit for them. And I encourage them to try the ones they don't like too, because there is something to be said about being willing to be uncomfortable and to try new things.
And how do you know you don't like it?
Exactly. And I've had some, you know, like I teach EFT, which is tapping. It's really weird when you first do it. You're like knocking on your face, and there's some points you feel like a little monkey. And I say, tap on that then. You know, like, this is too weird. I don't like this. I don't want to do it. Just be with your emotions. And I think we're such an avoidant society. We're such an avoidant culture, you know, with that toxic positivity, with that don't feel, just get through the day. Life isn't even meant to be fun. It's just, you just got to pay taxes until you die. No, that's not it. You can work hard and you can play hard and you can love your life and you can be really successful, but you won't be really successful if your definition is just always working hard, because where's the meaning in that?
Yeah.
You know, there are seven main areas of true happiness. And one of them, which is where I start with every client, is cultivating purpose and meaning in your life. And no matter what your CV or resume looks like, what does it look like inside your heart and mind? That's what I care about.
I love that so much. And I love that you just mentioned the resume thing. So I remember my journey to law school was storied, to say the least. And I wasn't even sure I was going to make it. And so when I went to law school and graduated, I worked really, really, really hard to graduate near the top of my class. And I was working with one of my professors. I wanted to be a public defender. I was working with one of my professors, and I thought about law review. And she says, I thought you wanted to be a public defender. And I said, I do. And she's like, then what the hell are we talking about law review for? And I said, well, because everybody does it. Like, it's prestigious. Everybody wants to see the work that you've done in law review. And she says, a public defender's office isn't going to care whether you can write well. They're not going to care what your grades say. They're going to care about whether you can stand in front of a judge and defend somebody who has done something that you can't understand. And I thought, there's no way that's true. And so I worked really hard. I only got two B's in law school. I graduated towards the top of my class. I went to my first interview at a public defender's office. I took my transcript. I might as well have framed it. I was so ready to hand it to them, and they didn't even ask for it. And I was devastated. And it was like this thing that so often we attach our self-worth to. When we get what it is we think we want, it means nothing. It means nothing at all. And so I love that you said, try this on for a minute, because our society also has this really interesting relationship with failure. If you start something, you got to finish it. If you start something, you got to finish it. Well, if I start something and I realize I don't like it, I don't want to do it, it's not going to take me where I want to go. Something I can't know or figure out until I start it.
Right.
Then why am I supposed to finish it? Because it's not going to take me where I want to go. So talk to me a little bit, as we're starting to come to the end of our time. Talk to me a little bit about failure and what that looks like in relationship to creating happiness.
It's vital. We totally have to fail at things. It's part of, again, it's part of life. You can hear the theme in everything I've said is accepting, acceptance, right? Accepting that we're going to trip, we're going to fall. We will fail, and we will fail over and over. And it's not that that matters. It's that, am I willing to get back up? I often equate life to surfing. I am not a surfer, but this is what I think about life. We're surfers on the ocean, which is life. And we can just get up on that board and take what comes, and we will get thrown off for sure. Failure, right? Have we taken the time to secure ourselves with an ankle strap so we don't lose the surfboard? So that we can at least grab onto the board and just kind of ride those rocky waves until we have the capacity to get back up on the board. Maybe we sit there a while until we can stand back up and ride the waves again. And sometimes they're just like, ooh, it's a nice day, no problem. And sometimes they're really, really extreme. And what matters is that instead of, if I fall off the board and that's it, I've failed. Well, what I even try it for in the first place? We will fail. That's a guarantee. But are we willing to get back up and try again? Because I say this a lot. Were you really good at walking the first time you tried
Yeah, I love that analogy because I'm like, can you imagine if you just would have fallen down and been like, I guess walking's not for me. I'm just gonna
Right,
sit
screw
here and
that
look
walking thing. No,
like
we fail all the time.
when we're learning to walk, we haven't become practical yet. Like, there's this really unfortunate time in our life where we become practical, and it sucks. And so if we can avoid that practicality point and stay that kid, you know, I love that you mentioned surfing. There's a movie, if you haven't watched it yet, called Chasing Mavericks. Have you ever heard of this?
No.
Okay, so Chasing Mavericks, it's one of my favorite movies of all time. It is a story of the youngest surfer. It's a true story, or based on a true story. We all know how that works when it comes to dramatization, but it's based on a true story of the youngest surfer to surf the big waves known as the Mavericks in California. He was 16 when he surfed them the first time, and this story is incredible of resilience and all of the things. But there's a image. He was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. And he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated the first time that he attempted to ride this wave. And it is his tumble down that got him on the cover. It wasn't his success that got him on the cover of Sports Illustrated. It was his failure. And there's a moment in the movie where this shot is being reenacted. And it's, I mean, it's a easily 60-foot wave. And he tumbles down and gets caught underneath it. And one of the themes through the movie had been counting minutes. He learned to hold his breath for 4 minutes. So they're watching to see whether he's going to come back up. And there's this 4 minutes coming up. And his surfboard comes up before he does. It ends up going over to the boat where this photographer for Sports Illustrated is at. And he picks up the surfboard, puts it in his boat, and a few seconds later, the surfer emerges and he swims over and he holds out a hand to pull him up and he says, no, just give me my board. And after tumbling down a 60-foot wave, staying underwater for 4 minutes, being thrashed around, when given the option to get in the boat, he said, no, just give me my board back, and then successfully rode those waves. There's a moment in that movie where it says, I love people that push the limits. Something that people get to realize, though, is sometimes the limits push back. And I love that whole metaphor so much. So if you haven't watched it yet, it's fantastic.
Thank you. I that sounds amazing, and I love that he just took the board back, because again, we're going to fail. What do we do with it? What do we do with it? It's feedback. It's failure is more feedback than true failure. It's only failure if we never get back on that board, if we never try again. If you fail a test, like resilience is such an important piece. People who struggle a little actually tend to do better in life because they learn how to overcome that. So it's why it's so important as a parent that we let our kids struggle and we don't try to just jump in and fix everything for them. Or if you're training somebody at work, you don't just take over and tell them how to do it. They have to learn how to do it for themselves. Any journey of happiness is the same thing. We're not always going to feel great. Things are going to be hard. We're going to feel like we've fallen off the happiness wagon, and that's okay. Can you just try again?
Yeah.
What are you telling yourself? What are you telling yourself when you perceive a failure? Because ultimately it's perception, right? Did you really fail? Or are you trying again? Right? We can look at Thomas Edison and the light bulb, 1,000-something failures, right? He didn't look at that as a failure. He was like, oh, let me try this new way. Okay.
It's and all I'm so glad he did, because my office would be so dark.
I am too, because I really, really love light. I had a resident in my senior living community who said, you know, none of it's a mistake. I just learned something new every single time. And so I turn that kind of into, like in acting, we might have a missed take. Mm-hmm. So we do a take two, we do a take three, we do a take four, and we're learning from it each and every time. So if I lose my temper and I count that as a failure because I didn't keep my total peace and calm, well, I probably will keep failing. I won't get stronger. But if I go, what was going on for me? That was really hard. Okay, did I get enough sleep? Was I drinking last night? Am I feeling well? What's going on for me that is exacerbating a shorter temper? So tomorrow when I start again, forgive myself, you know, give myself a little love, a little compassion, a little pep talk. It's okay, you're human. Tomorrow we're going to try again, and tonight we're going to try to get an extra hour of sleep. And we're going to drink a little more water, and maybe we'll take that walk so that we get some time in nature, and let's see how we do then. So we're learning from it each time. Failure is feedback, nothing more, nothing less.
I love it. I love it. All right. So you seem like an incredibly fun person to hang out with. And I wish that I could. I love that. I wish I could fly to Michigan and hang out with you. And my understanding is that I can. So tell me about that.
You can. So in May, I'm hosting a Radiant Happiness Retreat so that we can come back to basics, meet ourselves where we're at, learn a ton of skills and tools, and practice with a lot of space. I've built in a lot of integration time, and we're actually going to be on a farm. So we'll have time in nature with animals and beautiful walking paths. If you don't know Michigan, it's really much more beautiful than you can imagine.
Gorgeous.
And learning and practicing these skills together with people who are experiencing something, might not be the same as you, but it's something. And there's really something special about being in community as we learn new skills and tools and practice them together. And so it's this beautiful 3 nights of tapping back into who you really are, and leaving there a more radiant soul, because we're also going to learn how to release some of the dirt and debris of life from our shoulders.
I love that.
Yeah, it's going to be.
I love that. Release the dirt and debris of life. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, that information will be in the show notes. If anybody wants to learn more about the retreat, follow up on the conversation, get to know you a little bit more, what's the best way for them to reach out to you?
My name is pretty unique. I think there's one other Tamara Zoner in the whole world, and she will have everything posted in Spanish. So that's not me. She probably doesn't pronounce my name the same way either. But you can look me up, TamaraZoner.com. Or alifeyoulovenow.com. It'll take you to the same place. I play a lot on Facebook and Instagram and YouTube too. So depending on what you're looking for, I've got meditations, I've got pep talks, I've got real talks, and fun too. Because yes, I am really fun and I love to have fun. And we get to be childlike, not childish as adults, but childlike.
Yes. Huge difference. I love that. I love that. All right. Well, I have absolutely loved this conversation. I love this idea of happiness. I love the way that you approach it. I'm so thankful for the opportunity that we had to connect. Thank you so much for spending some of your time with us on the show today.
Thank you, Amber. This was really fun. Appreciate it.